I have a question for Dr. Payne about the heart. So far, my son's son, the heart is fine. He hasn't heard a T-wave. And when we did the surgery, there was a couple of people that are going to do the surgery for the scoliosis. I'm working with Mary Lisa, who has found out that all Friedrich's hearts are compromised, whether they're symptomatic or not. I wonder if you could just, there's some new parents here and stuff, if you could address that for just 2 seconds. And because I'm constantly monitoring his heart, constantly forcing the cardiologist. But what else should we be looking for in a young 15-year-old boy who's doing crazy things because he's a 15-year-old boy?
Well, that's good. The first thing that I would ask you to remember, and all of you to remember, is that it is the job of children to grow, and if you make them a cardiac cripple, they won't do that. So if you take away all the fun things in life, including the crazy things that you probably shouldn't do, it's no fun. And that, more than anything, is damaging to them. So number one, your kids are not cardiac cripples. Look out for the other things that they do. They're probably going to hurt a lot quicker than their heart. Okay, so that being said, and so far as I can tell, every single FA heart has been affected. The tools that we use today to look at those hearts are relatively insensitive to things that we want to know. So we can tell you about the shape and the form and the function of the heart, but I can't look into cellular biology with an echo machine. You can't look into how the heart is actually functioning at a cellular level with an MRI. We don't have that technology today. But if we use some tools like the EKG, every single EKG I've seen on an FA patient tells me that at a cellular level, there's something wrong. So that means that every one of them is at risk for something happening if they have certain things happen to them. One of those might be scoliosis surgery. So what do you do about that? Well, the thing that you would do would be to engage your cardiologist so that your children are seeing the cardiologist at least once a year. Engage the orthopedic surgeon so that you're sure that they're up to date on what FA is, and not all of them are. I'm not putting down the orthopedic surgeons or even the cardiologists because they don't always know. We're writing to get that out in a long time. So engage the orthopedic surgeon who's going to do the procedure. Engage the cardiologist. Make sure that you've engaged the anesthesiologist. Make sure that you've engaged the intensive care person who's going to be following your children in intensive care after surgery so that they're aware of what's in the literature about the heart. There actually is getting to be more and more about children with FA in the heart and going through intensive procedures. But no, I don't recommend that you restrict your kids on the basis of their heart. Let them do what they're capable of doing.
Follow-on question. FA heart that is asymptomatic except for an occasional, that's okay, occasional tachycardia event.
Yeah.
How concerned? What action?
I'm not so concerned. It kind of depends on what the tachycardia is. Was the child playing the latest video game? Well, when I'm shooting deer, my heart rate goes way up too. It's a problem. About what I do in my spare time. But if your child, for example, is having problems with arrhythmias, and most kids can tell you, and you can pick it up pretty quick, then yeah, you need to be talking to your cardiologist about it. One of the things that's becoming really clear is that we don't have very good natural history of what's going on with the FA heart. That's why we're trying to get recommendations made for ultra exams and frequent EKGs so that we can actually see when they actually. The other thing, and I see this all the time in my clinic, which is a regular cardiologist, but you're going to have to separate out the issue of your child has Friedrich's ataxia and is 15 years old, and your child is a 15-year-old, going to high school, whatever, and going through all the other things in high school that give them chest pain, tachycardia, anxiety syndromes, etc., that show up in my clinic as I'm having a heart attack. So tons of those. And it's fine to go see your cardiologist because, yes, you can, you've got something else that might agree with you. But the reality is, most people are going to have anxiety-based syndromes, and they're having fast heart rate because they're really worried about their exam, or they're worried about their boyfriend, and chest pain because we don't know why not. So separate out a little bit of what's just 15 years old and what might be real. And if you're not trying to do that, you're not. I don't expect you to. Go see your doctor. We're happy to help. Did that answer your question?
Well, sort of, because a fair number of our parents, have teenage children, and bingo, you know, they suddenly are sitting there and their heart's racing, and it's racing for 15 minutes, and they're trying to make a decision: do I rush them into the ER, and maybe if this happens once a month or more often than that. They've already seen a cardiologist, but they're trying to make decisions about, is this quote-unquote normal, and do they just have them lean back and relax and cold compress, et cetera, or every time this happens, do they jump in the car and run to the ER?
Okay. So that's a very excellent question, and it's, you're trying to parse what I try never to do with my parents and make them cardiologists. That's not your job. You've got a far harder job, which is raising a teenager. So the first and foremost thing to think about is that tachycardia, fast heart rates, are incredibly common in young people. Virtually every single one of them has a tachycardic episode at some point. The difference is it something that's going to be bad or not? And the second thing that I want to emphasize is, in children, they have clean coronary arteries. They can run as fast as they want for a pretty good long time, like a couple of days. So they're not going to have heart attacks. You've got plenty of time to sort this out. So if your child comes to you and says, my heart is beating fast, relax a bit and see if it goes away in 10 or 15 minutes. Suggesting it might have been an anxiety-related event, and that's about how long it takes to go away. Most of the time, when children have tachycardic events like supraventricular tachycardia, SVT, and some of you who are children like that, they know exactly what's going on, and they can tell you exactly what it is when it comes on, as opposed to being anxious. They learn that pretty quick. But SVT, which is a heart rate, most kids run around 200 to 220, they know exactly what it is, and you will too when that comes on. Most of the time, the tachycardias that you were experiencing in your children are going to have about 150 beats a minute. You can sit down and count that. So here is the rule of thumb for parents. If you can count the heart rate, it's not dangerous. All right? If you can't count the heart rate, it's dangerous. And by dangerous, I mean it can go for a day or two before you have to go see the doctor. Children tolerate, and young adults tolerate SVT extremely well. That being said, these are cardiopathic hearts, and now you need to get to see a doctor at some point. But again, 15 minutes, see if it goes away, calms down. If it doesn't, then yeah, I would say you need to call to your cardiologist and say, hey, my child is doing this and such. What do you think?
Did I hear you say, if it's faster than you can count,
yep. You
still have a day?
Yes. In fact, you know, I've even had babies come in and been in SVT clearly for a week, and they'll have some problems. Now, again, I have to caution you that these children have cardiomyopathies, all of them, so you can't wait that long. The point that I'm trying to emphasize to you, Paul, is that just because it's running fast doesn't mean you have to hop in the car and run the lights and sirens flashing all the way to the ER. You've got plenty of time to sit down and see if this just goes away and some anxiety syndrome.
An hour, a couple hours, 3 hours.
I can tell you, just relax.
Okay. Given the absence of other symptomatology, correct?
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Well,
that's, again, in pediatrics, those other symptoms almost never appear. Okay, so in adults, that they're having sinus tachycardia, or if they're having ASBT, for example, they'll get short of breath. They'll be out of energy, right? And children and babies, for example, they won't feed. That's about the only way they're going to tell you. That's their job. And other kids who are 5 years old, 10 years old, 15 years old, or the other symptoms, usually not a lot. Other than they may say, gee, I feel kind of weak, or I just don't feel like I have much energy, or more often, if this is really the case, my heart's racing way too fast, it won't go away. Okay. They can tell you exactly. All right, the hallmark of these fast heart rates, SVT, when they're bad, is that they come on just like that, and they go away just like that. All right, they turn on and they turn off. They don't build up, they don't slow down. Anxiety syndromes, on the other hand, they usually tell you the hands are sweaty, I'm kind of nervous, can't focus on something, the heart rate went up gradually, the heart rate came down gradually. The reason I emphasize you've got time is because you do have some time to see what's going to happen to your kids, right? But again, the rule of thumb is, if you can count it, beats per minute, then it's not going to be a dangerous rhythm most of the time. If you can't count it, then it means it's too fast, time to come see us in emergency. But again, I must emphasize something even before that. All of you should have established a relationship with a pediatric cardiologist so that you can pick up the phone and call and say, this is what's going on. And they'll talk to you through that. Because all of us are very accustomed to dealing with SVT. And for your children, SVT is going to probably be the common rhythm that comes up with this.
And that's beside you, right?
What's that?
That's beside you. Your relationship.
That's right.
A kind of a follow-on question. Could you comment briefly about the ejection fraction and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and if they get an echo, and what's the normal range, or is there a range that you start getting worried about?
Yes, I can. It's not a brief comment, because it gets to be very complex. The Friedrich's heart tends to be relatively thick. That's called hypertrophic. There are also many other heart diseases in children and adults that get hypertrophic too. So to an echo machine, they look the same, right? But they're not the same in cell level. So the heart can get very thick. When the hearts get really thick, that means that it makes it hard to perfuse them with blood, which your heart perfuses during the resting phase, the diastolic. So the reason that it's important to get fast heart rhythm under control with your child is a big heart is because while the heart is beating too fast, it doesn't produce as well as blood. So that's never good. That becomes part of the complex issue that you don't want to go into. Typically, the Friedrich's heart has excellent squeeze, the ability to push blood out of the body until very, very late in the disease. Typically, what we're seeing with the Friedrich's heart, I think this is an area that we're really discovery is that it's having problems filling with blood. That's the diastolic phase, okay, when it's resting. When the heart is resting, its job really is to fill with blood. When the heart is working or contracting, its job is to push that blood out. Most of the previous hearts seem to do pretty good pushing the blood out. It's filling with blood that they probably have some problems with. So in the long run, for children who have really severe hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and previous ataxia, controlling bad rhythms has become very important, right? And this is a different discussion than what we just had. And this is one where your cardiologist can be very, very much involved. Okay? But again, what I really, really try not to do is bring cardiologists to my parents. I want them to be parents. And leave the rest of it to me and the parts of it.
My
middle
daughter, Chelsea, had a cardiomyopathy at age 11. At the time, I didn't know she had FA. Brittany, our younger daughter, has never had cardiomyopathy. Is there more of a chance that Chelsea could have cardiomyopathy again? Is there a higher chance?
Both children have FA?
Yeah.
So this is the part that I don't understand, and the part we're really struggling to understand is why do two people with the same relative number of triplet expansions, for example, have relatively different manifestations of disease? We don't understand that. For example, there are other things, and this is what Sue Bay was talking about, there are other things that modify how genes are expressed, and it differs from person to person to person. Recent publication in Maggie, for example, from Australia, indicated that some of the other events that may regulate how genes are expressed in the heart or in the body of an FA have to do with the gene coming from mom or dad. It's called methylation status. Methylation status controls expression of genes in the body. So there are other things called epigenetic factors that may affect whether or not one person has a severe manifestation, another person has the same genotype, but not quite so bad. To answer your question, I can't say what the natural history of both children would be, because we just don't have that understanding. We don't have a kind of long-term data on these lines. So I'm sorry to be vague over.